everybody knew what was eventually going to go happen, but nobody knew when. Outside of the very top brass, the people that planned this thing, then again, it was postponed today on account of the weather got bad. And there was a kind of a storm, and of course, the seas had pretty high waves and stuff, and you couldn't manipulate and stuff like that. Our ship was called APA, I believe, 45. Anyway, the USS Henrico. I don't know what the capacity of it is, somewhere around 1,000 troops, I guess. Of course, they had to be prepared for meals and stuff like that. And then the landing craft, I don't know how many landing craft is on there. I think somewhere around 10 or 12 landing craft, so that they lower the landing craft then when they got ready for the invasion. Like I say, they was going to be the 5th, and it got so we had actually started, so then they had to turn around and come back. But we didn't get off of the boats, but some of them, the smaller boats, they actually debarked, and then they had to load back up again and said, no, now we're going. Anyway, they rendezvoused off of the coast, southern coast of England there, and so that all the ships from that point on then was designated to a certain area on the beach. So on the morning of the invasion, they got us up, so-called got us up, who could sleep. But anyway, at 2 o'clock in the morning, and give us a little breakfast. And then we prepared to get our gear together and everything, and then load. Then they lowered the landing craft. And then you went over the side of the ship down a cargo net and into the landing craft. And at the proper time, then they started toward the beach then, bright and early.
Tell us what you went through when you made it to the beach.
Of course, the Germans had these beaches fortified. They had these, what they called hedgehogs, which was iron angles and this and that. Plus that, then they had wooden poles drove in the ground. If you hit it with this other pole, if you slid up on that pole, it would turn the boat over. They had thousands of those things. Well, then part of this crew then, when it was, they went in, supposed to went in around midnight and blow a pathway through that stuff so that the rest of the boats could get through, which nothing worked right, but nevertheless, that was the general idea of it. Then the bottom of the ocean, in addition to that, was they had called runnels. Our boat got hung up, and they dropped a ramp, and the water was about neck deep to me. And I guess that was, I don't know, at least 100 yards from the, at that tide level then, which was supposed to be high tide. So that 100 yards was wade through water, and our five guys in our radio team tried to stick together along with a lot of the soldiers and stuff. We had our packs, our clothing. We had paratrooper boots. I don't remember if we had underwear other than the so-called shorts, because it was pretty cool. Then on top of that, they gave us a pair of coveralls that was impregnated with a solution in case the Germans used mustard gas. These coveralls then would, mustard gas wouldn't affect that. So we had quite a few clothes on. And then, like I say, you get all your gear and your clothes wet and everything, and trying to wade till you got to the shore. And of course, there was plenty of bullets flying around. And when half of your outfit doesn't get to shore, so the shore that we landed on was not sand; it was rocks about as big as your fist. They call it something else. I don't know, but anyway, it wasn't a sand beach. The beach that we landed on. That was it. We stayed, as far as our radio team, we stayed there all the time, right on the beach till we departed, which was, I guess 8 weeks or something like that. But we stayed right there on the beach. Plenty of fire, plenty of fire. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Were you hit? Were you wounded at all, or hurt?
No,
or injured?
I got all through everything without even a scratch, not even a bruised finger or anything. I got our outfit took quite a few casualties, dead and wounded.
Tell me what happened as far as the initial push, where you landed, your section of beach, and what happened as far as getting it secured.
Well, I guess that would really be, would to me, would be hard to explain, other than the fact moving all the supplies and all that stuff and getting a foothold was object number one, getting a foothold there. And so like I say, things certainly didn't go according to plan. And so the fire, German fire, was a little heavier than they figured it was going to be. And like I say, there was lots of casualties. So you had to adjust. And the lead colonels and captains and all that stuff got killed. Well, maybe a sergeant then had to take over. What was left had to take over. And so it was chaotic. And there was a German bunker built in the side of the bluff. From the beach, you went up, and then it kind of leveled off a little bit, and then it dipped down just a little bit, and it was a kind of a lake in there then. Well, they had that all in this particular area. Was had full of landmines and everything, so that had to be cleared out first. Actually, we didn't have the equipment for that. The Army people had to go in with their mine detectors and everything and clear that all out first before you could even begin to get across this shallow. Then I would say the bluff, it was pretty straight up. It wasn't a rock bluff. At that section, it was just dirt. And I thought it maybe would have been like 50, 60 feet high. And then on top of that then, the Germans had these trenches all along, and they had a gun. I don't know what size the gun, but anyway, they was two on this side and two on this side, and this guy sat in there kind of like driving a truck or tractor or anything. He sat in there, and them things would spew out. They would spew out the lead, and that was, they had them, and then plus the people with rifles and all that stuff, all along the brim of the top of that hill. So it was no picnic. Yeah.
You were saying that some of the officers who got killed or wounded had to be replaced by people underneath them at lower rank. Did you wind up getting an immediate promotion due to somebody above you getting taken out?
Well, they wouldn't. You just took over. No, I didn't have to take over, but a lot of them did. And if you've seen a wounded person there, you give him a shot of morphine and try to ease his pain a little bit, and stuff him up a little bit with a Band-Aid or something to keep it from bleeding too much, till somebody with more equipment and stuff to get a, you just had to do the best that you could. Of course, there was more supplies kept coming in all the time. And then later on, when things quieted down, they moved the harbor, the British, and I guess the Americans along, they made these things they call mulberries, which is these big, actually it was just a concrete ship. And even that, then all any ship that would float, they took over there and they loaded it up. And when the things became unloaded, they would sink them then for a brick harbor out there. At the harbor. And of course they landed these mulberries, they brought them in. And well, they didn't have any, they just brought them in and sunk them out there for a breakwater, for a harbor then. And third or fourth day, came this big storm and just about demolished everything. But they got through that and everything. And one other thing, I don't want to give the RAF guys, but these ships, a lot of them had these barrage balloons. Well, one of them barrage balloons got loose, and it was just floating around up there. And here come a couple of RAF Spitfires, and they shot at that thing and missed it. I said, man, I don't believe I want him to be a pilot. If he can't hit an old floating barrage balloon, how could he ever hit an airplane? But that's what happened. So then, like I say, even today now, they come out with all these water mattresses and air mattresses and things. And I said, I can't take credit, but I said, I'm going to take credit. I said, I made the first air mattress. All your equipment and everything had these tube life belts around it. You squeezed, they had the CO2 capsules. So after things quieted down, I went around and picked up a bunch of them. Of course, they had a stem that you could blow them up. So I made me an air mattress so I didn't have to sleep right on the ground. So I said, I'm going to take credit for making the first air mattress.
Did you have to shoot at some Germans as well?
No, fortunately or unfortunately, no, I didn't. No, I didn't have to take any pot shots at any Germans. However, when things quieted down, they brought the German prisoners back over our beach to load on the LCVPs to take them back to England. They brought quite a few back over our beach, but I didn't shoot at any.
Did you talk to any of them, or did you get close enough to them
no,
to talk
I,
to?
No, I didn't. A couple of our guys did, though, because one guy, and he wasn't a radio, he was a signalman. He could talk a little German, and I don't know if they was going to allow that or not, but he could talk a little German, but I didn't know German or anything.
Did any of your friends or anyone in your immediate unit not make it that day?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Several of them. I guess that, to me, I guess that's something you can't describe. You just got to be there. And I'm sure even today in your ground fighting and everything, you just got to be there.
I'm going to ask just a couple more questions about Omaha Beach and your time there. Sum up the few weeks after D-Day, leading up to when you left and went back to England?
Well, like I say, after about the third day, they finally got the Germans pushed back. So then it was no danger whatsoever. However, on that, I think it was the third day, along the beach there, that part of the beach had sand, and there was tracks there, trucks and bulldozers and whatnot, and tanks and whatnot. And our bulldozer operator, the Army Demolition, had missed a mine, and he'd run over that mine and it blew the track. It didn't hurt him, but it blew the tracks off of that bulldozer. After that, it's the third day. I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of vehicles up and down that, but he just got over that track. That mine was, Germans had planted that mine in there. Sanitation, if you called it that, was non-existence, because my granddaughter said, we was talking, Grandpa, how long did you ever go without a bath? I says, well, I don't know for sure, I says, but I think about 6 weeks. What? I says, yeah, you don't take many baths to sleep outside of wading out in the water, but they of course, they're really young, and they just can't begin to visualize what went on and everything. And
one other question: did you meet any of the French people that lived in the Normandy area?
Where we landed, this little town called Saint Laurent. That's the way I pronounce it. I don't know what the French pronunciation is. So a friend, one of the guys, I said, let's go into town. And that was, I guess, about a week after. And you didn't know how many Germans were still snooping around. But anyway, we went into town and talked to a few of them, but basically no. We just pretty much stayed right on the beach with in this little town. I guess it was maybe a half mile inland or something. Maybe it wasn't even quite that far, I don't know. But we did go into town and run around there. But luckily, the Germans had all left at that time.
I'm assuming the local citizens were very glad to see you.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were glad to see you. And, of course, they took a pretty good beating also, the French people. They took a pretty good beating.